You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Do you know that Republicans have introduced a piece of legislation that could potentially rob millions of American citizens of their right to vote? I didn't until I started reading a little bit more about this, much to my consternation. I am very, very pleased to be joined in this 3 o'clock segment that we have every Monday with the Center for American Progress Action Fund by Greta Bedakovics from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. She's the Associate Director of Democracy Policy there, and she's here to talk with all of us, including you, about the SAVE Act and its potential repercussions here in Wisconsin. Welcome to the show, Greta.
Hi, Maggie. Thanks so much for having me.
Very happy to have you. This sounds very innocuous. Ooh, it's the SAVE Act. But what does this thing, what does this piece of legislation actually do?
Yeah, I think innocuous is exactly right. Legislation is called the SAVE Act. It in no way would save Americans. What it would do is it would require Americans to essentially show documentary proof of citizenship every time they register to vote and every time they update the registration information. So what that means for most Americans is they would either have to present a passport when they register to vote or their driver's license in combination with a birth certificate. And this is where we see a lot of issues start to arise, because as we've shown with data, the majority of Americans don't have a passport. Only about 43% of Wisconsin citizens have a passport, and 85% of married women don't have a birth certificate that matches their current legal name, which would also affect over a million Wisconsin women.
So 85% of married women do not have a birth certificate that matches their married name. So how would they be able to vote? Like, what would they have to do?
Yeah, currently under the bill, it's very explicit that you would essentially have to have the application, the name that you were applying to register to vote under has to match the one on your birth certificate. So that's the problem that married women face. There's a provision in there that basically charges this commission based in DC, it's called the Election Assistance Commission, where they can develop voluntary guidelines that states can adopt to resolve any name change discrepancies. Like the same way that when women go to the DMV, they show other documentation like a marriage license or change of name documentation in order to prove who they are. Those are processes that states similarly could likely adopt under the bill, but they would vary from state to state. So in some states, it might be easier to show that you are who you are in your birth certificate. In others, it might be a lot harder, but it would really require women to basically go down to register to vote with like filing cabinets worth of data in order to prove who they are, where, you know, their spouses and men would similarly not have to jump through all of these loopholes.
So if you're married and you went from Smith to Jones and your birth certificate doesn't say Jones, you would have to, I guess, because again, as you were explaining, Greta, the federal legislation doesn't say guarantee that bring your marriage license and that's enough, which, by the way, if I asked all my married friends, do you know where your marriage license is? I'm certain most of them would be like, I have no idea. But so that's not a guaranteed approach. So in the states that would take a more restrictive approach, and here in Wisconsin, certainly we've got divided government. It would be interesting if that sort of easing of the ability of women to vote was something that Robin Voss would support. If they don't allow you to use a marriage license, I'm just trying... How would you do it? Like, so would you have to either like legally change your name back to Smith and go through that process, or go get a passport, which now takes months and due to further cuts from the Trump administration would take even longer and costs, I think, northwards of $150. Like, how would a married woman that went from Jones to Smith actually go vote? She'd have to plan like months ahead of time and expend an incredible amount of time, energy, and money to ensure that she was able to vote.
Yeah, I think your emphasis on time, energy, and money is absolutely accurate. I do think that if the bill passed, states would adopt procedures. I think we'd likely see that marriage licenses and name change documents would count. But like you said, most married women, like that's something that everybody would have to have on hand immediately. You also can't just have a regular copy of it. It has to be a certified copy. So women are going to have to like go to their county clerks and start tracking down this documentation and paying for certified copies of everything. If you've been married multiple times, that's every single marriage certificate. If you change your name back to your maiden name in the meantime, it's those name change documentations. So when I say filing cabinets, I mean, for some women, that's what literally it would take to vote. And again, not just the first time you're registered to vote, but every time you update your registration. I myself have moved 4 times in the same election jurisdiction over the course of 6 years. That means I would have to take all of these forms of documentation and basically prove my citizenship status and who I am to my county election official instead of allowing them to do their own job. But you're right, just like you said, if that's not something the state legislature adopts, you're basically making women pay for a passport in order to register to vote. And that's a poll tax, right? A passport easily costs $150. If you need expedited delivery service, it's all these additional costs. And I think even if you're ordering these documents, you know, a certified copy of your marriage license and things, that's basically a poll tax. And again, there's like no money behind the bill. A lot of states, for example, if you need voter ID to register to vote or to show voter ID at the polls, they provide that free of charge so that it's not considered a poll tax, but there is no money behind this bill.
Fascinating, Greta, that there is no money behind the bill, because certainly after voter ID was adopted in many states, without those free voter ID provisions, it was those laws were challenged successfully because it effectively amounted to a poll tax. What are Republicans saying in response to this concern about, and listen, married women, if they have a job or more than, you know, nothing to, you have anything to do with your life, it's like, oh, I've got hours to go track these documents or to drive into my clerk's office, especially live in a huge, geographically large and dispersed rural county in places like northern Wisconsin or Texas, and traverse an hour and then stand around and wait in line. What do Republicans say about these concerns?
Generally, they've kind of brushed them off. Speaking of driving times, we actually just on Friday published a new report that shows that Americans in large rural counties, how far they would have to drive. We looked at the 30 largest rural counties in the U.S., excluding Alaska, because people there would likely have to fly. But all of that aside, in these 30 largest counties, folks would have to drive 4.5 hours on average to get their closest election office. But we found counties in Arizona and Wyoming where people would have to drive 8 hours round trip to vote, right? So they're taking a whole day off to do this because we're looking at business hours anyway. They're basically paying out of their pocket. They're paying for gas to register to vote as well. In some counties, it's $80 in gas money just round trip to register to vote, basically. And not only is it basically making voters pay for themselves to be able to access the ballot box, we're also saying that states would have to take on more debt as well if this bill became law. Right now, Wisconsin, right, like most states, has online voter registration. It's very easy to do. It's very cost efficient. But if the bill were enacted, you would have to basically use a paper registration form and show it to your county election official. They would then have to process that. And that's way more expensive for them to do. It requires a lot more manpower. It requires a lot more hours than the online voter registration system. So it's both voters and states who would be out money under this bill.
So all of you will pay more in taxes to do this thing that we don't actually need. This is the part that I want to get into next, Greta, mm-hmm. because I have said for many years now that Democrats need to stop hand-wringing about voter ID laws. They've become baked into the cake. Showing a photo ID, I think, to most Americans doesn't seem like a bridge too far. And that sort of battle has been already fought. This is of a different type altogether. And it's ironic to me that there seems to be this, oh, well, if you were pro voter ID, then this thing, yeah, this is just an extent. No, this is completely, completely different. And let's be very clear here, an incredible burden on women voting, especially, and married women, which I thought Republicans were big fans of the married women, but I've digressed. Here's the thing. It is utterly unnecessary to ensure or to prevent people who are not citizens from voting to show this kind of documentation. Can you tell people a little bit about the systems that are in place that are effectively back office systems? People don't see or feel them in their particular processes because it's happening effectively in the back office of each state's electoral systems and processes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it is easy in some ways to compare this to state voter ID laws, but I'll be very clear that most Americans likely don't know this, but like when you register to vote, you basically already provide either your driver's license number or the last four digits of your social security number when you log into like an online portal or when you fill out the application. So basically the same ID, right, that you show at the polls, your driver's license number, is what you use in most instances to register to vote. So we're talking about like voter ID being a policy that kind of already exists for registering to vote. And like you said, this goes way beyond that. You know, some of the online systems, I mean, that's why it's the job of election officials. This is what they're paid to do to verify voter eligibility, right? The DMVs in a lot of states already collect citizenship data. And so when you use, for example, like automatic registration, or when you go to the DMV to register to vote, they use that information in order to verify your eligibility and your identity. They also use, you know, name change documentations. They use moving documents from the postal office, all of these things that are federally based. They use citizenship data from the Department of Homeland Security, right? Like we have these federal and state databases that election officials doing their job verifying your identity, but the bill completely flips it on its head. Now it would be up to you to like prove your eligibility and your identity to your election official.
Folks, I am joined this half hour by Greta Bedakovics. She's from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. She's their Associate Director of Democracy Policy. We're talking about this terribly named SAVE Act, which isn't going to save us from anything other than, I don't know, saving women the trouble of voting, Greta. Ladies, just stay home, especially you married women. You don't need to vote anymore. Not to put too fine a point on this, this is utterly and completely distinguishable from voter ID, and it is attempting to solve a non-existent problem. Even organizations like the Heritage Foundation and ALEC have failed to find any evidence of non-citizens voting beyond like a handful every once in a while, like a 0.00001%. And it's because the Department of Homeland Security and the Social Security Administration work with your state's election officials to verify citizenship. We're going to come back with Greta in just a few minutes. Not a few minutes, a few seconds. We're going to continue this very important conversation. Do you know a woman over the age of 18? You think she likes to vote? We discuss more when we get back right here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Tomorrow, everyone, Donald Trump will be addressing a joint session of Congress, his first address to both houses of Congress in his second term. We're going to have special coverage of that starting at 8 p.m. tomorrow. This is happening tomorrow evening. Following the speech, we're going to also broadcast the Democratic response given this year by newly elected U.S. Senator Alyssa Slotkin from Michigan. You're going to want to check this out. Again, our special coverage begins just before 8 p.m. tomorrow, not to be missed, especially because I was reading earlier today that many Democrats have invited Ukrainian Americans to join them for this address. We are going to be joined at the bottom of this half hour by Wisconsin Ukrainians. We've got Karina Tweedwell joining us. Tweedell joining us. We're going to talk about the rally that they held on Saturday. We're going to share with you information about where you can find out more about Wisconsin Ukrainians and their efforts to aid Ukraine. So again, you're going to want to keep it locked. But right now, we are talking to my very special guest from the Center for American Progress Action Fund, Greta Bedakovics, about the SAVE Act. The SAVE Act, again, not saving anything, surely not saving married women's ability to vote. Greta, again, thank you so much for making time. I wanted to share with you some feedback we got from one of our texters on the text line, texting in, I believe, let's see here, texting in from the 608 in the Madison area. Yes, I went through a heck of a time to get my real ID from the Wisconsin DMV. I had to get certified copies of my birth certificate and marriage license for $40, and then I had to go back to the DMV, in other words, to comply with Wisconsin's voter ID law and the real ID, which is now being used increasingly for travel to verify identities for travel purposes. The texter continues, last fall, I spent $180 to get my very first passport thinking that this might happen. For folks who have just tuned in, Greta, explain again what the SAVE Act requires and why it places married women's voting rights at great risk.
Absolutely. So SAVE Act is legislation that would basically require Americans to prove to their election official that they're a citizen by either presenting a passport or a government-issued photo ID, like your driver's license, with your birth certificate. But the issue for married women arises because it's very explicit that basically the name you registered to vote under, your current legal name, has to match the one on the birth certificate. And that's not something that millions of married women have.
It's such an incredible hurdle. And again, given Republicans' stated affinity for married women, I wonder how this is going over from Republican married women. Have any Republican married women in Congress stood up and said, hey, I don't think this is a good idea? Or have these votes been entirely along party lines?
The votes haven't been entirely along party lines, but I do think we haven't seen Republican, you know, elected officials speaking out on this, but I think in a lot of conservative and red states, we have seen a lot of women starting to speak up on this. You know, we saw some town halls in Georgia, for example, where a Congressman McCormick from Georgia was confronted about this. And, you know, it's a red state, it's a pretty red district, but you saw this town hall and women cheering when he was being questioned about this SAVE Act. And I think ironically on this part too, Republican women are actually more likely to take their spouse's name than Democratic and liberal leaning women. So this provision in particular hits Republican women actually the hardest. But when you look at the passport, I mean, the data shows the same thing there. Republicans are actually less likely to have a passport than Democrats and independents. Of course, rural communities are also like affected in their own right. But really, no matter which way you cut this bill, it's actually Republicans in many instances who are the worst off.
Yeah, I was just looking at the article that was published by the Center for American Progress, which we will share on our show notes for today. 53% of U.S. citizens do not have 53% have a passport, so nearly half do not. Only 43% of Wisconsin citizens have a passport. So it's nearly 1.3 million Wisconsin women do not have the requisite documents to go vote if this were adopted tomorrow, if Donald Trump signed this into law tomorrow. 1.3 million Wisconsin women may be locked out of voting on April 1st in our Supreme Court race, which many believe will decide whether or not women have the right to control their own bodies. It seems a little retrograde, might be a nice way to put it, Greta, that yet again, we may be entering into a time where laws are being made by elected representatives that women aren't themselves able to select in the meaningful way that we at least have been since 1920. Where can people go to find out more about this, Greta, and what should people be doing if this is concerning to them?
Yeah, I think one thing I'd point out there too, I think we've heard a lot of people try and downplay this bill and say like, you know, there's processes in here for married women, how to take care of married women. But I want to be very clear that, like, right, we've seen conservatives and Republicans openly opposing the 19th Amendment, women's right to vote. We've seen them now dragging women out of town halls. We've seen them tell women to step aside, you know, telling them to step out of places of power. So, like, this bill is not coming at a coincidental time, right? And a lot of times things that are meant to set us back are often disguised to look innocuous and innocent. And so even in the face of being told exactly what this would do to married women by their own constituents, Republicans have not balked. They've continued to push this bill and continue to make it a priority. So, like, it is not a coincidence. I would encourage everybody, of course, to come to the Center for American Progress, look at our resources. Brennan Center for Justice also has great resources. We've seen secretaries of state like Jocelyn Benson from Michigan speaking out on this and publishing fantastic resources and videos and things like that. And I would truly encourage every person to call their member of Congress and tell them what this bill would do, because it would change the way voting works for every single American citizen. And even if you have this documentation, voting will not be easy for you, right? You can no longer register to vote online. You can no longer mail in an application. And so you'd have to go in person. You can no longer register to vote from your couch.
Folks, that's Greta Bedakovics from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Again, we're going to put their article on the SAVE Act on our show notes for today. You can find those at civicmedia.us/Maggie Dawn Show. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Wisconsin Ukrainian's Karina Tweedwell. We're going to talk about their rally on Saturday and what the United States about face means for you and Wisconsin. When we come back right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us for this last half hour of great discussions, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Well, I hope you have a plan to vote on April 1st. It is a monumentally important election for the state of Wisconsin. The future of our public schools will be decided, as well as, I'm just going to say it straight up, a woman's right to control her body will also be decided on April 1st. Please make sure that you are registered to vote, that you know where your polling place is, that you've crossed all of your T's and dotted all of your I's. You can do that by going to myvote.wi.gov. Please take the time to check it out. Make a voting plan. Take a friend. Take a neighbor. Take someone who maybe doesn't have a car. Make a voting plan. Maybe even early vote. Just get that out of the way so you don't have to worry about lines on polling day. Right now, I am very humbled and privileged to round out today's Monday program. We began by talking about Ukraine, and we end today also by talking about Ukraine. I'm joined by a representative of Wisconsin Ukrainians, Karina Tweedwell. Welcome to the show, Karina. You've had a very busy weekend.
Thank you so much, Maggie. It's an honor to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. Wisconsin Ukrainians, very busy over the past weekend. I believe you had three rallies in Milwaukee, Madison, and Green Bay. Tell us why you were rallying, although I hope that is abundantly obvious to everyone. How did the rallies go? What was your message that you want Wisconsinites to hear and that you want the Trump administration to hear?
Absolutely. Yeah, we actually started getting busy last week. We had our planned rallies to commemorate the third anniversary of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. And I just wanted to emphasize that when we talk about the war in Ukraine, I wanted for our listeners to be clear that it did not start in 2022. My hometown is actually in the area that has been occupied by Russia since 2014. So this is 11 years now. So for anybody who claims, maybe any administration that might be claiming that the war would not be happening under them. This has been with Obama and Trump and Biden, then Trump again, that the war in Ukraine has been lasting. But after last week, we actually needed to do emergency rallies just this past week. And we were really grateful for our community coming together in a matter of just one day. We organized it overnight. Like you said, it was in Madison, Green Bay, and in Milwaukee. The turnout was spectacular. In Milwaukee, I can attest that we had a few hundred people, so really good turnout considering we only had a day to let everybody know. And we organized those rallies in response to the meeting between President Zelensky and President Trump, just seeing just how things went down and seeing the lack of support and honestly just the some of the Russia's propaganda that came out through some of the points that President Trump and Vance were sharing was deeply, deeply concerning. So we came out to stand up for truth and to dispel some of the lies that were propagated during that meeting.
Yeah, just to correct the record on some of those lies and some of the lies that have been told over the past week by Donald Trump, Vice President Vance, as well as senators like Lindsey Graham. Here are some of the lies. Obviously, Ukraine did not start the war. Russia invaded a sovereign country. Full-scale invasion, as my guest Karina has pointed out, began just over 3 years ago. Here's another lie. Donald Trump, in that meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky, claiming that the United States has provided $350 billion to Ukraine and that half the money is missing. That's a lie. We've provided about $100 billion, the vast majority of which has been in the form of weapons from U.S. stockpiles, which defense industries here at home then replaced and sold and did business. So it was an overall plus for the U.S. defense industry. None of that support is missing. And in fact, Donald Trump's handpicked special envoy to Ukraine, Keith Kellogg, said, quote, "We have a pretty good accounting of where it's going." Wow. And just a week ago, Saturday, so not this past Saturday, but a week before Saturday, Putin launched 267 drones into Ukraine, which was by far the largest drone attack of the war to date. What are Wisconsin Ukrainians, what has there been their response to what can only be described as an about face of decades of U.S. foreign policy and a commitment to support Ukraine in its stand against an aggressor with no respect for sovereign boundaries?
We are incredibly concerned and understandably worried. So many of us have relatives, very close friends still in Ukraine. And like you mentioned, that the air raids are happening every day. The drone attacks are daily. And just talking to my uncle, who is right now in Kyiv yesterday, he was saying that they're just used to it. At this point, they don't even go to bomb shelters. It's so exhausting living in this reality for so long that people are just used to going to work and recognizing that they might not come back alive. So it's very, very scary. But I think it's really important to keep in mind that this is not just about Ukraine. What's happening in Ukraine right now is really the war against the West. And if Ukraine falls, then the consequences are going to impact the whole world. Because right now, Putin is illegally invading Ukraine. And if we appease Putin right now, then these kinds of actions are then okay. So the United States siding with North Korea and siding with Belarus during the UN vote
resolution,
is
yes,
just an absolutely concerning direction. And I think it's important for all citizens who are paying attention right now to stand up and say that this is not what America's populace wants, that this is not who our allies are.
I think your point about it is an attack on the West by proxy, right? That the alignment of Ukrainian interests and American interests wasn't some idea pulled out of thin air by prior administrations. It was an extension of all post-Cold War and post-World War II U.S. foreign policy to defend our Western democratic allies. And Putin's aims for the last 25 years to weaken the alignment of the United States and our Western European and former Soviet Union new allies has been well known, to destabilize, to draw and place a wedge between these interests. But whether or not this administration chooses to see the alignment of interest between Ukraine and the United States or not, the fact that Donald Trump is trying to now somehow invent a difference in objective between the United States and Ukraine, or to impose upon Ukraine a deal negotiated without Ukrainians at the table, without President Zelensky at the table, will do nothing about the actual reality of the threat that Putin poses to the West. That is a fact, and certainly a fact supported by universal opinion from the entire U.S. intelligence community over the last 25 years, make no mistake. I wanted to get in and ask you, Karina, as a Ukrainian, what was your reaction to the tone of the meeting, to the meeting itself? As an American, I was simply shocked. And even had it not been an ally, I would have been less shocked, but still shocked to watch an American president engage in shouting down another foreign leader from the Oval Office. What was your personal reaction to that meeting? What is the reaction of your fellow Wisconsin Ukrainians?
Yeah, it was absolutely appalling and really hard to watch, just infuriating. And there's another little known fact that in 1994, there was a Budapest memorandum that was signed between the United States, Russia, and the United Kingdom at the time, in order to basically say that Ukraine should give up their nuclear weapons. So at the time, United States was one of the parties that promised to Ukraine, we're going to protect you. Now give up your nuclear weapons. And Ukraine at that time had the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world. So thinking about how much might we had back then, and then we relied on who we thought were our partners saying that they would protect us, and to now for Donald Trump to act in a way that if, as if Ukraine is somehow owing something to the United States, where absolutely United States benefits from supporting Ukraine right now. This is in United States security and national interest to support Ukraine. Because if we are going to allow the world order to be in such a way that illegal annexations are just common thing, that our world stability is going to fall apart. And especially for a lot of people that are struggling right now with the prices, with inflation, I think it's really important to keep in mind that we're all interconnected and the world order is impacting our prices. It's impacting our gas prices. It's impacting how available certain products are, the trade. So just simply hiding away from the reality and pretending that we can focus on our country here in the United States is just so short-sighted and very misguided.
Extraordinarily well taken points, Karina. Folks, if you're just joining us, my guest for this segment, her name is Karina Twiddell. She is with the Wisconsin Ukrainians. Two things that I just for re-emphasis is, one, the reason that the U.S. expends money in foreign aid for our allies, that we've entered into these agreements, is often the expression of soft power. Foreign aid often under attack from some conservatives, but the very brass tacks reality of these arrangements is that the amount that we have to expend in this use of soft power is a tiny fraction of what it would cost the United States if an active war and we had to commit troops if Russia continues its system of aggression or if the West further destabilizes. That's in direct military spending vis-a-vis foreign aid. Secondly, we're already seeing the impacts of this destabilization in our prices. You watch Western Europe destabilize further, potential tariff wars, all of these things. This is going to make it so much harder for the middle class and folks that may be more fiscally conservative for us to return to a steady economic growth cycle and low inflationary cycle. Incredibly well taken points, Karina. Where can people find out more about your organization and how can they help?
Sure. Yes, we have a website. It's Wisconsin-Ukrainians.org, or you can just search for Wisconsin Ukrainians, the full name of our organization, Wisconsin Ukrainians, Inc. And we're also really active on Facebook and Instagram. You can, again, just search for Wisconsin Ukrainians, Inc. And we also have a really active presence on these social media websites. So definitely feel free. I know some Americans who don't have any connections to Ukraine feel a little shy joining, but we absolutely welcome anybody and everybody who values freedom and democracy to join our cause.
Folks, that's Karina Twiddell of Wisconsin Ukrainians. I'll have some final thoughts on these incredible moments in our nation's history when we return right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I can't believe we're already here. It's the last segment on Monday. If you want to get in your thoughts, it's been a very busy start to our week. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Again, if you are a first-time caller, a woman, a conservative, or a vet, you will go to the top of the line every time here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I want to give a special, full-throated, big-hearted thanks to my last guest. She's from the Wisconsin Ukrainians. Her name is Karina Twiddell. I will finally maybe be able to say her name without stumbling over it once on this show. They organized three rallies this past Sunday, just yesterday across Wisconsin. You can find out more about their organization. You can get involved at www.wisconsin-ukrainians.org. That's www.wisconsin-ukrainians.org. I was incredibly impressed. I went and checked out their website, spent some time on it today. They received their 501c3 designation in April of 2022. They've got their strategic plan, their annual report up there. Very impressive organization doing great work. There are over 10,000 Ukrainians living in Wisconsin. Again, a big thank you to Karina. Just wanted to share some more breaking news. Again, confirmed, President Trump says 25% tariffs against Mexico and Canada will take effect tomorrow, Tuesday, March 4th. Stocks are plunging as we speak. Perhaps we've got a Black Tuesday that we're looking at tomorrow. I don't know how this is going to help keep eggs cheap. I really, really don't know how that's going to work exactly. I don't know how it's going to make housing less expensive. Don't know that either. We'll soon find out, I guess. I wanted to close out our discussion about Ukraine today by sharing a few things that I learned over the weekend. I think we need to remind ourselves that Kremlin officials celebrated on Friday. And regardless of what you think about Donald Trump, I forget the last time I heard a Republican friend of mine saying, when Russia wins, so does the U.S. I was struggling to remember when exactly one of my Republican friends, or frankly, any Republican elected official, made that claim. I don't understand it. Here is what the Moscow Times reported. This is Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said to a reporter on state television. The new administration, the Trump administration, is rapidly changing all foreign policy configuration. This largely aligns with our vision. When did Republicans decide that the U.S.'s job is to execute the Kremlin's vision on foreign policy? I forgot that part of the debate. I wish someone could point me to that portion of the election cycle where Donald Trump and other Republicans stood up, where Tony Weed stood up, where Derek Van Orten stood up, where Brian Stiles stood up, where Scott Fitzgerald stood up and said, the American foreign policy objective is now to accomplish the vision of the Kremlin. And again, do not forget the meta context here. Pete Hegseth giving an order after that disastrous meeting on Friday to cease the U.S. Cyber Command within the Department of Defense from its counter cyber efforts with respect to Russia. I'm sorry, what? Even conservatives, and I'm going to say conservatives of good faith, are calling out how absolutely ridiculous this about face on 85 years of American foreign policy has been. This is a conservative columnist. His name is Isaac Shore. There are outright lies. The verbal brawl between the three men began not because Zelensky was rude or came in looking for a fight, but because Trump and Vance were criticizing their guest. After Vance blamed the previous American administration for prolonging the war, Zelensky pointed out that the Russians had launched multiple wars of aggression over the last decade, committed atrocities against Ukrainian citizens, and violated past agreements. Vance responded by calling him disrespectful. Even setting aside the mendacious retelling of what happened in the Oval Office, this defense of Trump is rather a staggering indictment. Do conservatives even hear themselves? Let's close out with a reminder of what JFK called us all to do back on January 9th, 1961, to be that shining city on a hill. And to be that shining city on a hill, we must constantly be reminded by the great trust we place in our leaders and their heavy responsibilities. That's going to do it for me. Folks, we got a couple guest hosts in for Dom Salvia today. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for Ukraine.
When the night is cold and still, when you thought you'd had your fill, this is not a test, it's not a drill.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community.
Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.